Welcome to the Right Now Mastermind class. This is Rochelle, the host of the Right Now Mastermind class. We are delighted to welcome Anthony Flacco to talk with us about screenwriting. Let me give you a sense of who Anthony Flacco is. Anthony Flacco was selected for the prestigious American Film Institute Fellowship in Screenwriting and received his MFA in writing there after winning AFI's Paramount Studios Fellowship Award for his script, The Frog's Legacy. He was then selected out of 2,000 entrants for the Walt Disney Studios Screenwriting Fellowship and spent a year writing for the Touchstone Pictures Division. His two-hour documentary for the Discovery Channel entitled Deadly Spree was based on a true story. His true crime writing was also featured on a one-hour episode of The Prosecutors for Court TV. His first nonfiction book, A Checklist for Murder, was acquired and auctioned by Dell Books from Writer's House as a mass-market paperback. Anthony adapted his book as a two-hour television movie script and sold it to NBC Studios for a movie of the week. Anthony completed his nonfiction book, Tiny Dancer, for Thomas Dunn Books at St. Martin's Press, and the advance copy was selected by Reader's Digest as their editor's choice for August 2005, their 1,000th commemorative issue. His debut novel, The Last Nightingale, was released on June 12, 2007 to acclaimed reviews. In April 2008, it was nominated by the International Thriller Writers Organization as one of the top five original paperback thrillers for 2007. His second book in this series, The Hidden Man, was published June 2008, also to wonderful book reviews. He is also the co-author with Charlene Martin of the book Publish Your Nonfiction Book, Strategies for Learning the Industry, Selling Your Book, and Building a Successful Career. Anthony, welcome. I'm glad to have you with us.
Well, thank you, Rochelle. It's very nice to be here today. And hello to anyone listening. I appreciate the interest of you guys.
Thanks. Well, we have about 100 people signed up for the call. We don't have that many with us, but whoever doesn't join us will definitely be tuning into the recording. So, you know, everybody I talk to either wants to write a book or a screenplay. And even I am kind of interested in writing a screenplay. I don't know why, because but it just sounds like an interesting thing to do. So maybe you can talk to us about screenwriting.
Well, I think screenplays are high in on the list for people who write as far as ambition and projects they'd like to do, because so much of what we take in now in the form of entertainment is visual. We are a culture that is forgetting how to read books. Thank God not everybody in the culture is forgetting, but as a culture we are. If you doubt it, all you need to do is take a flight anywhere in the country and just go through the airport and try to find people reading an actual book. Some people will be on their Kindles, but most people are on their PDAs, surfing the web or texting. So we tend to think in pictures. The human mind tends to think in pictures anyway. The screenplay and screen writing and movies that are all around us keep our visual sense sharpened that way. So I think it's natural for a writer, particularly young writers coming up, to think in terms of writing for a TV or film outlet. The good news is that in spite of the fact that there is 90 million people who want to be screenwriters, there are more outlets than ever today, and that the great breakdown of the tyranny over entertainment that the big studios and the big networks used to have, you know, has fallen away, and the Internet provides so many opportunities for people to break in. For people who want to write screenplays now, my advice is forget writing for the studios. Write whatever is the best story, the best way you possibly can, and then once you've finished it, start looking for an outlet, and don't necessarily even bother yourself with the major studios. Unless you have a very solid contact and in to the studios, you aren't going to sell a screenplay there anyway. You're going to get jerked around and pour in your blood, sweat, and tears, and in the long run, you won't really have much to show for it. But today, there's so much that can be done with digital cameras. There's so much that can be done on low or no budgets. There are so many young filmmakers coming out of school that are looking for scripts. So especially if you can write a script that's inexpensive to produce or where the logistics of producing it are reasonably simple, that makes it all the more desirable for young people looking to get a film going to break in. And you team up with one of those people or direct yourself if that's your ambition. And a self-directed film is no longer unreasonable at all. It's something many people can do and do successfully. And if you put it up on the Internet, put it up on YouTube, and you start getting a million hits, Then suddenly the studios come to you, and they're talking to you about what can we do to get you on board, and it's a whole different picture than knocking on the back door with a script under your shivering arm and saying, is anybody in there who wants to read my screenplay? So market has changed vastly just in the last few years. Some of it is difficult news, some of it's bad news, but a lot of it is good. And the good news all centers in terms of availability. There is an outlet out there. There's a subtle challenge that comes with this new paradigm for producing film or any kind of image entertainment, and that's that the onus is shifted back into us as writers. You know, for a long time, when it was the studios and the big networks that held control over whether or not our work ever saw light of day, well, if it didn't, we could always tell ourselves, well, those idiots in the system, they don't appreciate, no, this is too brilliant for them, it's too insightful for them, it's too right or too left for them, and, you know, tell ourselves that as we lick our wounds and walk away. Nowadays, if you have something that's great, it will go out there, and it will find a viewership or a readership. And if you don't get it out there, there's really only two answers. One is that you haven't worked very hard on exposing it to an audience, or two, the more difficult truth, that it isn't very good. The greater availability of audiences now means that there is less excuse for us to write poor work or unacceptable work. And so, yes, on the good side, there's a lot of places to go with a script that you didn't have, 10 years, maybe even 5 years ago. On the bad side, if you can't get any action going, if you can't get any enthusiasm, if you can't get other people on board with your story, that's when we have to take a hard look in the mirror. And that's when we have to break down what we've written and analyze it. Do we really have something here that we think we have, or is what's actually down on those pages something, something we wish we had, but that isn't there yet? The power of rewriting is huge. And yet, that's one of the big things being lost in our culture today, because we're a very ambitious and impatient culture. We want our results, and we want them now. And rewriting is something lots of people, young and old alike, want to avoid. I'm not sure why. I think it's one of the joys of writing myself, but it's where excellence and polish come from. And now, with so much competition there, excellence and polish are what you use to make your stuff stand out. So the rewrite process is one of the biggest things that a person can do to help guarantee success in their writing. And that's after taking on the reality that there are tons of markets out there for your work. Just put away saying something like, you know, I'm going to write Brad Pitt's next big movie, and just try to write something that's great and that's producible and that's realistic in terms of young or new filmmakers picking up your work and being able to actually get it up on screen. And you find out there are opportunities now such as only existed for studio writers 30 or 40 years ago. Now, that's the great news in writing, that is, as far as you can push your imagination, there is a reader or a viewer or a buyer somewhere out there who will get what your vision is and be enthused and want to support it in some way. So, double-edged sword, the good side, availability of possible markets, the bad side, responsibility lands right smack back in our laps, and a lot of the comfortable rationalizations we used to tell ourselves for not getting our work out there just don't work anymore.
Wow. So, now, as you kind of talk about what makes a good screenplay, I know we talked a little bit earlier before the call about structure. Do you want to talk about what makes a good screenplay and kind of what kinds of things we can ask ourselves when we look at our work to give us a sense of what works and what doesn't?
Sure thing. The great writer, William Goldman, both a screenwriter and a writer of books, has written in a couple of his books on Hollywood. I think this one came from Which Lie Did I Tell? But he says the phrase, screenplays are structure. And that's one of those little truths. It's like those Russian dolls. You keep opening up the doll, and there's another little doll inside, then you open that one, and there's another. This thing just keeps unfolding the power of its truth the more you live with it and think about it. So a screenplay especially, also a book, but especially a screenplay, is an architectural construct. You can draw out a screenplay on a piece of graph paper on a timeline showing the various plot points that proceed all the way from the opening shot to the end. And a well-structured screenplay is one that has either been drawn out like that in the writing process or that you can draw out in the analyzing process and see exactly how each scene not only reveals what the scene needs to do, but leads into the next scene to create a sense of momentum and of inevitability that proceeds from the first shot right to the last. Structure is the way that you do that. I have two books, neither of which is written by me, but I recommend everywhere I go for the writing process and especially the screenwriting process. One is a fairly old book now. It might be 30 years old. A writer named Syd Field wrote it, S-Y-D Field, and he has two or three books. The first is just called Screenplay.
Mm-hmm.
And the other is called Writing the Screenplay. And in these two books, what makes them important, he lays out exactly what structure is and what it looks like in a screenplay. He talks about the screenplay paradigm, which is just a timeline, a horizontal timeline. He divides it into the three acts that most stories are formed in. And then he shows how to move your plot points down that timeline from scene one to the final scene and the roll of the credits. And it so demystifies the movie writing process. The clarity that it gives you is worth many, many times over the price of that book. The other is Robert McKee and his book Story Structure. Robert McKee, as far as I know, is still holding his personal classes that you can sign up for in Los Angeles, and he teaches them in seminars all around the world, I guess. He had last time I heard. And basically his emphasis picks up where Syd Field left off and goes onward. And he again talks about the structural process of screenwriting and breaks it down. I think he uses the movie Casablanca as his model, but there are tons of movies you can use. And he walks you through it scene by scene and shows you how something that starts as a paradigm or a story map on a page, on a horizontal chart, looks when it gets lifted up in story form and played out by actors and put up on a screen. And he helps make that connection from the typewriter or the computer right up to the screen with the actors doing the lines and show you a straight line from one to the other. So those two books, if you never read anything else about writing, they would tell you what you need to know to make your inroads in screenwriting and in the screenplay selling world, and also in just the world of trying to visualize a story in your imagination and then get it out onto a page so that a stranger can read it and appreciate it and visualize the movie it might one day be.
So I know, Anthony, that you write both nonfiction and fiction, and you've done screenwriting. So my question is, you know, how does your screenwriting work influence your fiction work and your nonfiction work? How has it really made you a different kind of writer? Or it has it? I don't know. I'm curious about that.
Very much so. I think it's helped me in two ways, maybe three or four ways, but two big ways. One is in forcing the idea of a structured story, no matter what I'm writing, a nonfiction book, a novel, or a screenplay. I put everything down on a paradigm chart. The book I'm working on right now, in fact, I'm sitting here looking at my chart. It's hanging off the ceiling, and it's about 6 feet long and 3 feet wide, and it's just a big horizontal timeline. And then on it, all the events of the story are laid out in 3x5 sticky sheets, about the size of a 3x5 card, but these are just those post-it sheets that you can buy and slap up there and move around on the chart as things change in the story. So that kind of structure, and this particular book I'm writing, this is a book proposal that I'm doing right now, so it'll have several chapters and an outline. And the purpose of this, the producer who hired me to do it, is to send to a movie star to attach to the film to do the film project. Then with the film project, they want to sell the book when they already know there's going to be a movie, because that's how you get the most money for a book. That's their thinking. And so as I write, I'm writing this book and book proposal with the final film that it's to be in mind. So everything is very visual in terms of how I tell everything. It's the same story, but you keep that camera in your imagination and you kind of shoot the story that you're imagining mentally and then describe what you're seeing mentally as opposed to just dreaming up a story and writing it down.
Wow, that's really interesting. And I can hear, you know, as you talk about watching people in airports and seeing how we behave, that we're a more visual culture, and so that's really necessary to actually sell a story, to have that visual element.
Increasingly so now, and there will always be, you know, a thin slice of our population that doesn't need a story in those terms, just like there was always a thin slice of our population who read books back when we were basically an illiterate rural society. So the world of books isn't going to die out, and readers aren't going to die out, but they will go back to being the fairly small segment of society that they've been through most of history, and most of our storytelling will be visual. So understanding the screenwriting process, I think, is vital for anybody, except the writer who is either a journalist writing for a newspaper or a magazine, or for someone who just wants to sit at home and write very literary fiction. Then I guess you can ignore the structural rules. Otherwise, I think it can't do anything but help. No matter what you want to write, comedy or drama or tragedy, it can be a period piece, it can be a contemporary piece, it can be an adaptation of someone else's book, or it can be an original work of your own, and the challenge remains exactly the same. You've got to be able to lay that out online, know why scene 3 is located at point 3 and not scene 5 or scene 7. When you move a scene, understand not just that you're moving it there because you need for the information to go there, but understanding the effect it's going to have on the scenes around it. What effect will it have on the progress of the tone? You may have all the right information on your story, but if you just move a scene, does it now have a weird emotional tone? Because you have to adjust that, too, in order for the scene to fit in. Mm-hmm. Using a paradigm and being able to look right in front of you and see what you've got and what you don't have is a great way to keep your structure right at the front of your imagination as you're thinking your way through your story, and to make sure you don't get at the end and go, oops, I got a major hole back there, and now my ending doesn't work.
Wow.
Structure protects you from those kinds of mistakes.
So let's say someone has, you know, a story idea. How do you start this whole process? It sounds like structure is really important to you, so I'm curious, do you start with structure? Do you start with character? How do you kind of begin the screenwriting process?
Well, the way the story comes to you, I believe, is different each time and different for each person. So you'll have a different set of data going into each story. It may be you began this with a character you saw that struck you as being great for a story or that you imagined. It may be with an incident that you saw or heard of or read about that you thought would be great basis for a story. So it all depends on what it is that's brought you to the table to want to be this writer to do that story. But nevertheless, whatever gets you there, I try to just go from big to small. It's a lot like the way an architect will do a building. The first thing you got to know before you worry about the walls and the color and the furniture and the windows is the shape of your pad, the foundation of the thing. And we know from construction that if a foundation is done wrong, it doesn't matter how well the house is built. It won't stand. It won't be true to plumb. It won't. The gravity will work against it. The same happens with a story. And your first work has got to be structure because that's the foundation all the rest of your story is going to build on. And I want to stress here that, I mean, this is whether you're writing a commercial, you know, Hollywood-type movie or a completely artistic, experimental work. I mean, if it involves story at all, if it has a coherent beginning, middle, and end, then it has a structure. And that structure can be laid out, just like an architectural design for a house can be laid out. And in so doing, you accomplish the same thing the architect does, which was to see with great specificity where are your strengths and where are your weaknesses in this story at that point. And you can address them. You can fix them so that the next day you come back and you have more strengths and fewer weaknesses. You go with general and become more specific. So you start, all right, I want to do this story. How would it begin? What's the best way to start into it? Well, you want to start into a story always as late in the action as you possibly can, so that there's as great a sense of urgency to your story as you possibly can. And I mean, even if your story is about an elderly woman living by herself, slowly sinking into senility, and she is the only actress in the whole piece, you still want to start it as late in the action as you can. In a story like that, the action would be internal. It would be mental. So you ask yourself, what is going on with this character? What's her mood? What's her state of mind? How's she feeling today? Has she heard from her family? Does she have family? Does her stomach hurt? Is she able to get down good food? All these questions will control what's going on in her state of mind. Once you have her state of mind, you say, all right, now, what is it that I need for that state of mind to be in order to move this particular story along? Mm. Once you know that, you then go the latest that you can in her developing that state of mind and start there. That's your opening. You then think, well, how do I want my story to end? You may already know, but if you don't, now's the time. I always recommend writers, don't ever just start writing and say, I'll let my characters tell me. That's an excuse for lazy writing. It isn't really artistic. It isn't really I'm going with my creative flow. It hurts my head to do this, and I don't want to, so I'm going to pretend I'm an artist and say I just want to see where the ending goes. I read works that are submitted here at the agency. I consult for Martin Literary Management, so I read dozens of books, book proposals, and screenplays every month. And the ones that were written without the ending being in mind, I can tell you within a few pages, there's a wandering feel to it. Irrelevant scenes, irrelevant comments, irrelevant characters that may have just been fun things that popped into the writer's mind, but they weren't tied into the story. They don't advance the story toward the ending. And you get to where you can just see it moving along and see that this was a writer who wanted to enjoy the feel-good process of creating a story but didn't want to to go through the not so feel good process of the hard work and the planning, and the mess that they turn in the form of a story is the result. I know that in some part working on the structural questions of a story kind of feels like balancing your checkbook. But everybody who tries to get into adult life without learning to balance their checkbook quickly learns why that's an important skill to have, and how messed up your financial life gets if you don't bite the bullet and sit down and do the work, whether it's any fun or not. Screenwriting is that way in spades. If you can make yourself sit down to the unglamorous work of your structure, the very glamorous work of a beautiful story that's compelling and powerful and moving with an ending that just kicks your ass, that then becomes something that's within your reach. Once you get your hands on one of those, you'll never want to let go of the structure method because you see how powerfully it works for you as a writer. And I always want to stress, whenever I talk about structure, this is no matter what you want to write, whether you write a commercial work or whether you write the most intimate, personal, private work that there is, a structure is a way of saying to your reader, I understand that your time is important too. And if you're going to spend that time watching my movie or reading my book, I understand that you deserve to have a coherent story that's satisfying to you. Otherwise, I'm just a narcissist taking up other people's times, stealing little bits out of their lives while I do nonsense that I didn't want to work on hard enough to make it good. I just want to suck your attention off of you and give you back my half-baked work. The beauty of the writing process is that the majority of the people out there who say they are screenwriters or authors or novelists are really just impatient people who want to go to a party and say, yeah, I'm a writer. They aren't people who want to sit alone and do the hard work. So if you are someone who will sit alone and do the hard work, you can leave behind 80 or 90% of the competition right there. And I'm telling you, I'm on the other end by doing this consulting work of reading the works that come over the transom, and I see how magically you can cut out a great deal of your competition just by caring enough and just by doing it right, just by not being impatient and putting together some pages and throwing them out there to see what happens. By having more respect for your own work and your own time, you then show more respect for the reader or for the viewer, and this communicates. A total stranger sitting in Kansas City will pick up your script and read it and go, wow, holy crap, this thing's great. We got to find the budget for this. Magic starts to happen when you touch people that way, and structure is the avenue that gets you there.
Well, I'm applauding you because I meet a lot of impatient people who don't want to sit alone and do the hard work. They just want to get the book done quick.
And right. We are an impatient culture, and I notice any time I get hired to write the book, after about 3 days, I start getting phone calls wanting to know when it's going to be ready. You know, everything is hurry up, hurry up, hurry up. And of course, what they want me to do is they want me to sit down and write a brilliant book that will get a New York Times, glowing review. But they'd like to have it this afternoon, if possible.
Yeah.
And so you have to deal with their expectations and let them know. Nothing is built in a day. Nothing that's any good is built in a day. And this is whether you're working with an impatient producer or publisher, or whether you're just dealing with your own ego, your own sense of expectation. If you care enough to want to write a screenplay, which is Sid Field and Robert McKee both call screenwriting the most difficult form of writing. Now,
wow.
I don't need to debate that with people. Maybe you think a novel is harder, but the reason they say so is because it requires you to, number one, be so disciplined in your structuring of your story, and number two, to be so concise in your writing. The screenplay is only 120 pages at maximum, and often 100 or less. There's no room for extra words of any kind. Every single mark or jot or smudge on that page is there for a reason, and you as the writer have to know why it's there. Or if something isn't in the script, it's absent for a reason, and you have to know why it isn't in there. Structure helps you answer all those questions because they are going to be asked of you. They'll be asked sooner or later. If you get a producer interested, they'll want to know. If you get a director interested, they'll want to know. If you get a star who's willing to star in your work and now put you on the map, that star is going to want to ask these questions, and they're going to want to see them answered on the page. They're not going to want to have to call you at home and get you to explain it to them.
Wow.
So by working structure, we are able to be concise. We're able to be focused. We're able to make sure every word that's on the page belongs there and needs to be right there at that point in the story. Like, you can look at your structure and tell yourself, okay, this is where I am, this is where I'm going, and down there is where I need to be. You'll be able to do much less wandering in your writing, and every word you put down is like another little bullet that you fire.
So how do you know if your structure is right or if it's leaning? I mean, what are the signs that your structure is kind of a mess?
Well, once you lay out a timeline and actually put your plot points on it, and once again, as I say, you start with the big picture and work in. What Sid Field has you do is divide your story into three acts and then look for where is the point at the end of Act 1 where some major event happens. That's called Plot Point 1. Look to the end of your second act and say what major event happens here that brings this act to a close and starts us into Act 3, which is the beginning of our ending. And then what is the major ending that is the climax of the story, where everything in our conflict all comes together and either there's a resolution or our protagonist is defeated. That's your climax. The denouement or denouement is that short amount of time after the climax to the very ending where you're winding things up, tying up loose ends, and getting your story ready for the fade out. With those main three points, your plot point one, plot point two, and your climax written down in your timeline, now you just start building as you would a jigsaw puzzle, plugging in the pieces and working from big to small until you have a set of small plot points all down that horizontal line, filling in the gaps between the beginning, plot point one, plot point two, and your climax. And you start to just see how your story progresses. Then, before you begin to write, you look at it and say, oh, okay, well, excuse me, I have a strong beginning. I get to the middle, however, and not a whole lot happens until about the time there's a big climax. So I see where I need to do my story work is between the middle of the story and the climax of the story. Because my beginning is good, my developing opening is good, everything gets the story and the characters introduced and moving, but then there's a kind of a slowdown until we reach the big confrontation climax. So I have to work on the elements there. Structure shows you this right away before you even write fade in. The reason that's so important is because the only other way you find it out is you write your whole screenplay, give it to people to read, and they start bringing back their indifferent reactions to you. And as you start trying to figure out why did this screenplay blow people away, then you're faced with, oh, because the structure doesn't work. Because they get into the story, but then it starts to wander. Or they can't tell who my main character is supposed to be. Or they aren't given a reason to care about how a story progresses. All these things that show up on a structure chart that tend not to show up if they're just in your imagination. When I speak at seminars afterward, I will often have a lot of people come up and tell me, you know, I like the structure thing you talk about. Actually, I do that in my head. I just do that in my head, and because I like to get right to the writing. And I do the other thing, I just keep it in my head. And my universal response is, no, you don't. You think you do, but you don't. It's never the same in your head. And I'm – hello.
That's and okay. I think we just had a little interference. Go ahead.
Okay. It's not in your head, even if you think it is. The doing of it has power, has great power. And I mean, even if you are a brilliant person with a photographic mind and an IQ three times higher than mine, this is still a thing for you to do, a great thing for you to do. By organizing your thoughts and focusing them in through this timeline, through this chart, through this paradigm, you increase the power you have of whatever natural intelligence and talent and storytelling ability you may already possess. You maximize it. So I can't say enough good things for that part of the process and for how important it is. And let me tell you, when you get down to the point of submitting it somewhere, when it gets to some guy like myself who has to read the intake and who opens up your story and says, okay, I hope this one's good because I'm tired of reading crap, you want that person to be going 20 minutes later, holy mackerel, who wrote this thing? Instead of going, yeah, well, here's another impatient jerk who wants their $1 million and doesn't want to do the work first, and you throw it aside and you go to the next script, hoping that maybe that one will be better. I urge everybody to just grasp the fact that I know we can't change our culture. You know, in our lifetimes, we are going to continue to be an impatient and greedy and selfish culture. It's just what we are. But that doesn't mean we have to be that as individuals. And that doesn't mean we have to be victimized because our culture is that way. We can turn that on its head and use it to help us. I've certainly used it to help me, and I continue to do so. And as long as I continue writing, I'm going to do so. And that's just by taking the time to rewrite and polish your stuff, first using structure to make sure it's clear to begin with, and second, using the polishing process to make sure it's finished before you send it anywhere. You take 90% of that huge herd of people who were competing for your same contract, and you leave them behind. You've seen those pictures in the media of when they start off a big urban marathon, and they've got thousands and thousands of people that come surging forward when the gun fires. Well, those are the writers out there who are all going for a publishing contract or a screenwriting contract. And then you look at the end, those few people actually crossing the finish line, those are the ones who get the contracts. The other people who fall behind, some of them are hardworking, worthy, talented people who just got screwed by chance. And that does happen. Most of them are not. Most of them are impatient and greedy people who were trying to get an easy fix because they're losing their mortgage or whatever their story is and didn't want to actually do the hard and unglamorous work of writing before you proceed to the glamorous part of having your writing produced and collecting a paycheck. So what you do is use their impatience, use their greed, use their unwillingness to do the hard, detailed work against them. If they're going to insist on being that way, let them use that to take themselves out of the crowd so you can still be there when the time comes to shoot the finish line and see those three or four people who actually make it there. Structure will do it for you. I've seen it again and again and again. And I've never seen a book or a screenplay that sold for any particular amount of money or that did particularly well in the marketplace that didn't have a solid structure to it. And that's regardless of the genre or the writer's style of writing.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. I'm a big structure believer, and I think as a reader, I feel safe when I read a book that has good structure. I just feel like, wow, I can really depend on this author because I know that they're going to, you know, produce things in a proper order, and I'm not going to be wading through a large middle section that's boring me to tears.
There you go. Yes, it's a structure really. You know what? It's a form of hospitality. When I have a reader, whether we're reading a screenplay that will eventually be a film or whether it's for a book, that reader is in a sense a guest in my home. And if I don't tend to the structure and make very sure that what I'm offering them to read is my best work, it's kind of like throwing a dinner party but you don't clean your house first. And people show up there, and you got your dirty laundry lying around. There's stacks of dirty dishes, and you just go, oh, yeah, ha, ha, aren't I cute? My house is dirty. And no matter how tactful your guests may be about it, you know they're walking away thinking, geez, what a pig. And couldn't they have cleaned up a little before they had us over? Well, it's the same thing when you write. You know, I think because you send off stuff to be read by a stranger, a lot of people want to just throw something up against a wall. I'll see how it goes, and I'll see what their reaction is, and I'll use that to guide my next choices. Well, if you use the profession to guide your choices, you cut that very small number of outlets where you can take something with the hope of selling it, and you reduce that number even further because now they've seen your junk in an unready state. They're not going to want to read it again. Reading a manuscript is hard, and evaluating it, and reading it for a second time after you've already read it is like taking a beating. It just hurts. No one wants to do it. And working with psychology is the smartest thing you can do as a writer. And understand, if we are an impatient culture, well, the person you're sending your work to, they're just as impatient as you are. Their PDA is going off, and they got emails to return, and they got a million things just like you do. So what you want to send them has to constantly seduce them back to the page. Don't put me down yet. You're going to miss something that's good. Now once you turn the page and you read the next thing, uh-oh, don't put me down now. There's more good that's coming. Don't answer that phone. Don't answer that email. Stick with this story because I've got more good stuff. This is a constant conversation that the writer has with the reader. And I say reader even in a screenplay. And that conversation has always got to be you reassuring the reader that you understand they don't want their time wasted and that you've done all the head work to prove not only will their time not be wasted, but they're going to finish that thing, put it down, and go, wow, that was great.
Wow. Well, this is a perfect point to open it up to questions. Does anybody who's hanging out in their cubicle or sitting at their house have any questions for Anthony?
We could start by asking if anybody has a particular writing problem that they're into now on a current work, whether it's something you're thinking about writing or something you're in the process of writing but you feel stalled at this moment. Have we got any projects that are in that shape that someone would like to discuss?
I'm not sure if I can hear you. I can speak. Am I being heard?
Yeah, I hear you.
Oh, I'm sorry. This is Bob Roman.
Hi, Bob.
I hope you haven't heard my munching. I'm trying to eat my lunch while I'm doing this.
No problem.
I'm like, I was looking for my my mute number. I'm like, where is this on his phone? I just had a question about the timeline. Can you use, because I use mind maps, can you use a mind map to do kind of the same thing of putting your writing together? That's similar
sure,
to the timeline.
Yeah, I'm not addicted to anybody's particular system. The beauty of what I'm calling a paradigm or a timeline is simply that it lays out your structure in front of you.
Okay.
Any a system that allows you to visualize your story in full, beginning, middle, and end, is a great system. What it particularly looks like on the page I don't think is important.
Okay.
I know Sid Field, his particular way of doing it was to talk about writing out your scenes on 3x5 cards and then arranging them on the floor. well, that works too. In any case, it's a way of allowing you to visually see exactly what you have and what you don't have. Because our imaginations will trick us. We want so badly to write something great, number one, and number two, to have it be finished, that our imagination will seduce us into thinking, oh, yeah, that's enough for Act 2. That'll get me into Act 3. Yeah, yeah. So now I'll go on to this really cool ending that I want to think about because it's really fun. And that's great, except if you do that, you may not notice that your act is going to sag in Act 2 and your reader is never going to reach your ending because they aren't going to go that far. They're going to stop. So any story map, mind map, paradigm, story chart, they're all just ways of laying out what you've written so far in front of you and letting you see what you need to write or not write. People are tremendously resistant to this, and I'm not sure why. I was very resistant to it when I was in my 20s and just starting out as a writer. Even now, it's hard for me to explain why. I think somehow I thought that if I consciously employed structure in my writing, particularly in the initial conceptualization stage of the story, that it would turn me into a Hollywood whore and my stuff would all be, you know, commercial junk. And structure is a waffle iron. Structure is not the batter. The batter is what determines the way a waffle tastes, whether it's any good or not. whether it's even nutritious or not. The waffle iron is just the shape of things. Well, a screenplay and the structure of a screenplay and those 120 pages, more or less, those are the waffle iron. Every screenplay will have that shape. But what goes into the waffle iron, you know, whether it's just, you know, white bread waffle that does nothing but rot your teeth and get you fat, or whether it's healthy with nuts and grains and seeds and stuff, nutritional stuff that's good for you, that's all the writing itself. That's the story. That's you. So structure is all of us. The individual story is you. Your story, no matter how unique or how uniquely told, will work better if it is structured with a coherent beginning and middle and end. Now, people usually bring this up, so let me just try to kind of head it off at the pass. They will say, well, what about something that doesn't use a coherent structure, a movie like Memento, where it's all about time slippage and memory slippage and everything is flash forward, flash back, flash forward, flash back. If you are able to follow that film, whether it's Memento or any other, if you're able to watch it and keep track of where the story is going, and when it reaches the end, you're able to understand what the story was, then it had structure. Even if it seems like the time frame is backward, forward, flashback, flash forward, yada, yada, that's all visual flash. It's like the paint job on the walls. It's not the walls. If you look underneath it, if you were to lay out the story, you'll see it progresses smoothly through a beginning, a middle, and an end. And the flashes forward and back and the games with time or with memory or with perception, they're all just considerations of style to make the watching of the story entertaining, but they're not elements of structure as far as linking together like railroad cars to bring your story to its natural conclusion.
So you're saying that there's a structure even in things that look like they're not structured?
Yes, if they work and if you can follow them. Now, you'll see some badly done stories or books, movies, that are boring, that you can't really follow them, you can't stay with them. It's almost always because the structure is a mess. If you start trying to write it down, you'll see it's a mess. Sometimes it's because the writing was bad to begin with. Other times it's that perhaps someone wrote a brilliant script, but then it started getting messed with in the production. The producers change things around, then the director changes things around, then a movie star signs on and goes, oh, well, my part isn't big enough, let's add some lines to this scene. Now lines get added to a scene, even though the scene itself doesn't need the lines. We're basically now indulging in salving an actor's ego. All these things go to affect how that movie's going to look when it finally hits the public eyes. A screenwriter, I mean, all we can do is turn in work that, if they will film it, will be great work. Whether or not they decide to do it isn't in your hands, you know. It's a collaborative art. Now, one of the things when you write a screenplay that you have to accept is, this may see the light of day or something very different, but with the same name, may come out of it. Now, there's a famous line about a writer who wrote a Broadway show who are those guys, those comedy guys, those brothers, and I forget their names right offhand. And he's listening to the dress rehearsal, and they're halfway through the show, and at some point someone asks him how it's going, and he says, quiet, I think I just heard one of my lines. Meaning, everything that was happening was brand new to him, and that's how much his work had been changed. This is something you live with in the screenwriting field, much more so than the writing of a novel or a nonfiction book. It's much more collaborative. But because it's collaborative, and you want to send your work down the pipeline, and you want it to be as good as possible when it's finally a movie for someone to watch, structure, coherent writing, clear writing is the best way to get there. And the more clear that your writing is, the less likely people are going to later, less likely it is that people farther down the line are going to want to mess with it and change it and see it as inadequate in some way.
Thank you. And thank you, Bob, for your question. Just my quick answer to it is that I use mind maps all the time to structure whole books and then to structure individual chapters. For me, anything that's visual is helpful because I like Anthony, believe that structure really supports the reader. And so I need to see kind of how things are laid out so that I'm giving the reader the most clear presentation possible. Because that can, as a reader, I find it so confusing and frustrating when writers don't do that.
It's a way of taking care of your writer. You know, it's a way of paying them back for taking time out of their life to read your stuff. One writer who does this beautifully, whether or not you like his work, is Stephen King.
Yep.
Now, I don't happen to care for the horror genre myself, and a lot of the stuff he writes I thought was kind of silly, but his writing itself, if you ignore the genre, ignore the horror, and just look at his writing, he so clearly loves what he does. He loves wordplay, description, he loves characters, he loves dialogue, and he loves weaving all that into a tight, tight story. And so whether you like his genre or not, anyone who reads Stephen King will see this is a writer who's taken good care of his readers from page one. He understands you're busy, you're distracted, and he wants you to stick with his story, and every line he writes is calculated to glue your eyes to the page and to keep you turning those pages. We want to do the same thing with a screenplay. We want to make people hungry to get that thing up onto a screen and off the page.
Any other questions?
Well, this is a contented group. Okay. The takeaway for me, and I'll tell you, after 2 years of writing at the American Film Institute, the takeaway from that experience really was structure. And if it sounds like I'm a broken record, it's only because I can't overemphasize the importance of that and how hard the natural human tendency is to avoid using structure when we write. People are tremendously resistant to it. I'm not really sure why that is. As I said, part of my rationalization when I was young was I thought it was going to turn me into a commercial whore. That was a foolish waste of time. People have other reactions, too. Maybe it's just laziness. But structure isn't more work. Structure is less. If you'll do your structure work first, you'll do far less rewriting down the road. Structuring something out in the beginning is the fastest way to get yourself to a finished piece of work that's polished and professional and ready.
Wow. Well, that is a great takeaway. And do you have a final word of wisdom for us before we kind of sign off for the day?
Well, yes. When it comes time for you to market your work, whether you're looking for an agent or whether you're going to market it directly, research the places you're sending it. Don't ever send out a Dear Madam or Sir letter. All that says when you start off Dear Madam or Sir or any anonymous greeting like that is, guess what? I don't care about this submission enough to figure out who I'm writing to or what it is that they actually do and writing to that person. I'm just going to write down a general thing, put it in the mail, and hope for the best. This brings us back to our greedy and impatient culture once again. If you can avoid the temptation to join that foolish bunch and instead do your research. Who's the agent you're sending it to? What's that person's name? What else have they represented? Do they even do your kind of work? Do they do screenplays at all? Or are they a literary agent and you're wasting your time? Know that. Be able to write, Dear Bob, the last film that you represented went on to do great things for Disney, and I think the one that I'm sending you can work on that same market. It's a similar kind of story with a different take on it, and it goes like this. And then you do your pitch. Instead of, Dear Madam or Sir, would you please read my screenplay? To which my response is, Dear writer, no, I got a life just like you do. You know, why do I want you to take something you've basically thrown in the trash, send it to me in my email, and now I have to take time out of my day to read it? I can't care about something more than you care about it when it's coming from you. So how much you care is going to directly affect how much I care, and how much you care is going to show in the structure of your work.
Wow. This has been wonderful, Anthony. I want to thank you for being with us. And I want to remind all of our listeners that our guest today has been Anthony Flacco, and he is the author of many books. And I will be sending you a link to this recording as well as a link to some of his books. And I'll also include a link to the two books he recommended so that you can go ahead and pick up Sid Field's book and Robert McKee's book.
You guys should know. I don't have any connection to these guys or to their books, so don't be thinking I get a piece of the royalties or anything like that. These are the two main tools that are in my bookcase for my writing work, and they're just what I would recommend to you. If you were my brother or my son or my daughter or whatever and saying to me, how do I get started, these are the two books I would put in your hand and say, study these like the Bible.
So y'all have homework over the holiday season. You can grab these books, and instead of just watching movies, you can read about them and figure out how to write one of your own. So I will be emailing you, Anthony. I will be emailing you, too. So thank you, Anthony, for being with us, and thank you all. And I look forward to seeing you next year in the Right Now Mastermind class. Take care, everybody. Have a happy holiday season.
Bye-bye,
everybody. Bye-bye.
So long.
Thank you.